The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Gorgeous day once again here on the plains in Auburn and Opelika. Sun is shining, getting a little hot out there. We're creeping up towards the 90s this week, which that basically means it is summertime here in the state of Alabama. Lots to get to on the show today. Normally, we have Lindsey Crosby in here in the studio with us, but he was wrapped up with some things today, and so we will pick back up with him next week for our Baseball Power Hour. Normally on Tuesdays, we sit and talk about all things baseball, Atlanta Braves, Major League Baseball, SEC, with the tournament going on right now. Unfortunately, we couldn't get him in here today, but we will pick back up with him next Tuesday. In hour number two at 3:15, though, Double D, Daryl Dapridge, will be joining us on the phone line. So we get to talk to him about some college football things for Auburn and definitely some basketball things. As you can find Daryl on Locked On Auburn a couple of times a week and also doing some written work at auburndaily.com. So he'll join us coming up in hour number two. Until then, though, since there is no guest in the studio, it's you and me, and the phone lines are open. Whatever you want to talk about on this Tuesday afternoon, I want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? What do you want to discuss on this Tuesday afternoon? And I want to lead off with the story that I think is one of the biggest in college football right now. And I'm sure you've at least seen the headline. And if you have not read into this, it gets pretty wild. And we've been waiting on this to sort of happen around college athletics, and particularly in college football. Because of all of the NIL things that happened and all the money that's began to be thrown around, this day was coming at some point. And if you have not seen it, Jaden Rashada, the former Florida commit for football, Jaden Rashada suing Florida and head coach Billy Napier and a booster over an NIL deal. Here's the beginning of the article on ESPN.com. All right, from Paul Levine and Dan Murphy. It says, quote, former University of Florida football recruit Jaden Rashada is suing coach Billy Napier along with a big-time Gator booster and others claiming they defrauded him out of millions of dollars by backing out of a promised $13.85 million agreement after the quarterback had turned down offers tied to other programs. It goes on to say the lawsuit filed Tuesday includes an allegation that Rashada signed his national letter of intent to Florida on December 21st of 2022, less than an hour after Napier promised the player's father a $1 million partial payment that day upon signing. Rashada never received the $1 million, and the boosters never fulfilled the deal, the lawsuit states. Wow. Talk about some crazy stuff right there. He is claiming, Jaden Rashada, former recruit, is claiming that Florida backed out and cost him almost $14 million in NIL money. That is absurd. Between Florida and some boosters, we're talking $14 million. And people thought I was crazy saying that players were going to start making $10 and $20 million. Here we are. We're here. And now, because a recruit is upset and feels that he was wronged, he is filing a lawsuit against a head coach in the SEC and the boosters that are tied to its program. Isn't this wild? Isn't this crazy? It shouldn't be. This should not be an insane story. This should not be a crazy headline. Because this day has been coming. This has been coming for a long time. The article goes on to continue to say, by signing with Florida, Rashada turned away from a prior commitment to the University of Miami and a promise there of $9.5 million, according to the lawsuit, which is a portion of the damages Rashada is trying to claim. It alleges several accounts pertaining to fraud, negligence, and interference with a business contract. That's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. And for those of you that get tired of the NIL talk, I get it, because it's just another aspect of the game now. And I mean, we could sit here for 2 hours Monday through Friday and talk about NIL, and there would always be something to talk about. But this is news. This is news, because Florida and the head coach and the boosters behind the program are being sued for almost $14 million. That is unbelievable to think that one singular player, one recruit, was going to be worth $14 million in college football. The days of recruiting a kid and a kid committing to you because he likes your program, because he thinks he can be better at your team and you can develop him better, give me a break. Those days are long gone. Long gone. He was committed to Miami, where he had almost $10 million in NIL money through the university and through boosters. And then Florida came in and said, yeah, we can do better. Here's $14 million. I've got this booster here that's willing to help you out. And, hey, just as a little bonus, you sign that contract right now, I'll give you $1 million. Good night. That's where we are. And this was a couple of years ago. Just think about what it is now. People talk about not knowing the NIL numbers and wanting to know and making that public knowledge. Do we really want to know how much money that colleges are throwing at these kids right now? That boosters and collectives are throwing at kids right now? Do we really want to know that number? I don't know if we do, because I think it's going to blow you away with the amount of money that is being paid. And, you know, there's always been those conversations of, well, the market will balance itself out. Eventually, boosters and colleges and all these different places are going to figure out it's not worth it to pay an 18-year-old prospect $10 million because sometimes it's not going to work out. Sometimes it's going to bust. And I personally, Jacob Goins, have always been on the other side of that. I'm against that because I don't think that's how it's going to work. People believe that it's going to balance out and the market will settle itself out. I beg to differ. I beg to differ. And what I use for my evidence on the statement and my belief that money is only going to go up from here, the money is only going to go up. If you are a high-level quarterback in college football, the money that you are going to be able to demand will continue to grow. And you know why? Because there will always be somebody willing to pay it. Always. There will be a collective, there will be a school, there will be a booster, there will be a donor. Somebody will always be willing to pay it. Will the day ever come that they will not pay it? No, because somebody will. Heck, the University of Minnesota may be saving up money right now for the future quarterback they want in 2035. But when that day comes, they'll have it ready to go. And they'll pay it, which will continue to grow the market. And the thing that I use as evidence for that is look at player contracts in the NFL, in the NBA, in any professional sport. Since when has a major quarterback gone into negotiations and said, you know what? I know they're paying quarterbacks $500 million, but I think I'm okay to take four. oh, you offered $350? Yeah, that sounds good. That's cool. That's fine. I know there's other quarterbacks making more, but yeah, that's okay. No. They go in and demand the highest amounts. And every single year, we continue to see a new player, a new quarterback, a new point guard, a new center fielder break a record for the highest contract in NBA, NFL, MLB history. It happens every year. How many times do you see that headline? Record-breaking deal. Highest paid quarterback in the history of the league. Because that's where it's going. Because why? Because there's always a team willing to pay it. Now, there are a couple of, I guess there's a couple of outliers here. Take Patrick Mahomes, for example. He took a little bit less money. Tom Brady took a little less money back in his day because they wanted to pay other guys and make the team better. That idea is gone. Nobody cares about that. 99.9% of players nowadays don't care about that, especially in this NIL era where the money's only going to grow. They're never going to take less. Some guys will in NIL. Some guys will take a little bit less to go play for a school that they feel is better for them. But what happens when Kansas football all of a sudden finds the money to compete with the Michigans of the world? And that sounds like a crazy statement, but one day it will not be. One day it will not be. And then, on the off chance that Kansas can offer an extra $1 million to somebody, they're going to find somebody that'll take that chance, somebody that will jump on that ship and say, Michigan, appreciate what you've done. You're a great program, but yeah, they got a little bit more money, so I'm going to go check them out. See you later. And Kansas is going to have the best player they've ever had. That's what's happening here. But then you start getting into the problems of, oh, now it's time to pay. Oh, now we got to pay the kid. Well, I don't know if we have the money for that. Hey, Booster, we need that money that you said you were going to give this kid because he committed and he signed, so he's asking where his money is. And if that booster disappears, that booster's gone, then you're in trouble. Which is why I've continued to say we're heading towards contracts. Full-fledged contracts. If you are an 18-year-old quarterback, running back, receiver, defensive back, doesn't matter, and you want to come and play football at Auburn University, and Auburn is offering you $5 million, just to keep math simple here, you are going to have to put that in writing. You are going to have to play a certain amount of time, attend a certain amount of classes, and do a certain amount of things to earn that $5 million. You have to stay here for a certain amount of time. You can't sign up, play a year, take your money and dip out and go do it somewhere else. That's not how it's going to work. Because the colleges and the programs, they have to defend themselves. They have to protect themselves. But in Jaden Rashada's case, he's trying to protect himself, the player, to guarantee and make sure that they actually get paid all that money that the head coach said he was going to get when he sat on his living room. When he sat inside the living room on his couch across from the kid, his mom and dad, and said, yeah, we got you covered. We got $13.85 million. We're ready for you. We got $14 million. And hey, you sign that contract right now, we'll put $1 million in your bank account. The players have to protect themselves too and make sure that they get paid. It's just like any other business. This isn't about football anymore. This isn't about basketball anymore. The business. I'm paying you a contract to come here and play football. You're going to be here for 2 years. After that, if you want to leave, that's fine. It's a 4-year contract with a 2-year option. We're going to pay you X amount of dollars from the university or from a collective, or which, I mean, those may or may not even be a thing moving forward. Or these boosters have guaranteed, and they've written contracts and signed contracts too, that you're going to get paid. And it's going to avoid lawsuits like this. All of that is coming down the pipe. If you want to leave, cool, but you don't get that money. You want to transfer out? Fine. Break your contract, you're out. All of that is coming, man. That's all coming. This is starting it. Because there's no other way. This word of mouth and my word is good as gold, that's not flying anymore. That was flying when it was a scholarship on the line and a starting spot in the two deep. But we're not talking about that anymore. We're talking millions of dollars to players and their families that apparently is not getting paid. And kids and families feeling like they're getting cheated. And the programs and the schools and the boosters are on the wrong end of it. It's wild to see how the landscape has changed so much. And we're talking about so much money, life-changing, life-altering money, for dozens and hundreds of players. And now you have $14 million lawsuits being filed from a player, a former commit, to a head coach and the boosters that back him. Unbelievable, man. And it's just a new era in college sports. And this is not the first time, and it will not be the last. But I think contracts are the way to go. You've got to get it in writing. It's got to be all done by the book. No more under the table crap. No more, yeah, we got a little bit extra. I know a guy. No more of that. Everything will be out in the open. That five-star recruit goes to Alabama, you're going to know exactly how much he made. That's how it should be done. Now, whether that will be the case, I guess only time will tell. Let's get to our first break here in hour number one. I want to hear from you. What do you think about all this? What do you think about this whole situation, where it's headed, and what's your fix for all this? I'm curious on what people think. I think everybody's got a little bit different opinions and different solutions for all this. And I'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We'll take our first break. More after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Man, this story just gets more and more insane as I read more in this Jaden Rashada stuff. Again, the former Florida commit is suing Billy Napier and some boosters at Florida right now for almost $14 million because he claims that they promised it to him and then backed off and did not give it to him. And look, if you want a lot more information on this, go to ESPN.com, go to the college football page, and you'll find it. It's all over the place. And I'm reading through more of this timeline of kind of what happened. And basically, there was a booster that, and there's a couple of them, okay? And there's a coach that was there, the strength the director of player engagement was trying to get Rashada to commit and wanted him to be there, yada, 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 right? He was formally committed to Miami, was Rashada. He was committed to Miami in a $9.5 million NIL deal, okay? Florida then came to him with their boosters and says that the $13.85 million promised to him was Hugh Hathcock. And this is what ESPN says, a names on the building's eight-figure donor to Gators Athletics. He's also a defendant in the lawsuit, along with his dealership, Velocity Automotive. And so what happened here was that guy came to Rashada and said, look, we'll get you whatever you need. You come to Florida, I'll take care of you. I'm going to put it on the dealership. We're going to get you some money, whatever, yada, yada, yada. Okay? So Rashada then flips and goes to Florida. He was going to get a signing bonus. He was going to get $3.85 million over 4 years in NIL money. And this is just getting insane here. He was going to get almost $14 million over 4 years, a $500,000 signing bonus through that car dealership, and the rest of it was going to be paid through the NIL collective, Gator Guard. And as everything was coming together, that Hathcock guy decided, yeah, he didn't want to do that with his company and started pulling back his guaranteed NIL money. And so as Rashada was about to commit, he was like, I don't know. He decided that he didn't want to because He got a letter from the Gator Collective that said they are basically terminating the NIL contract that they had. Oh my gosh, this is just insane. He had signed it and they had found some loophole to terminate it because the booster had backed out of it. He was then instructed not to sign the letter of intent. Oh my, I mean, this is just insane. He was told not to sign the letter of intent. They said, we'll give you $1 million if you do it right now. And he signed it that night. And there are tons of more details on this. So just, again, go to ESPN.com. I probably didn't explain that very well, but go to ESPN.com and you can find it. This is dirty, man. I mean, it's just gross. And I'm not saying that I don't know who's in the wrong here. I'm sure there's more details and information to come out. But, man, you're talking some dirty stuff right here. And you know what? You know what's crazy? Is this is stuff that's been happening for 30 years in college football. Maybe longer. This stuff has been happening forever. It just hasn't had a true label to it. And it never got brought to light. It didn't get reported like this. Lawsuits were not filed back then when School X said they were going to give you a little money under the table, but School Y came back with more, but School Y then pulled back, so then you ended up going back to School X. You see what I'm saying here? That didn't happen. You didn't come out with a lawsuit because it wasn't legal back then to pay players. But we know what was happening. We're not dumb. We're not stupid. They didn't roll up to campus in a brand new Camaro just because. It wasn't just a coincidence that they had a brand new car. It wasn't just a coincidence that they were living their best life or that their parents had a new house. And I'm not talking about any one school in particular. This happened across the country. It was no secret that their dad got a new job at a car dealership in town when he came to school. Those things have been happening forever. But now that it's legal, now kids and players have the right and have the freedom to say, no, you screwed me over. You did me wrong. I'm coming after you. And what it seems like here is Florida and these boosters had some money that they promised, a contract in hand, and they found a loophole because the boosters didn't want to pay it anymore. Which, that's going to happen. That goes kind of against what I was saying is there will always be somebody to pay it, but how many more of these situations are you going to have where somebody may want to pay it on Monday, but by the time Friday rolls around and they start thinking about it, they're thinking, maybe I don't want to pay that. Maybe I don't want to put all this money from my business into this 18-year-old kid. And again, that goes against what I believe. Because I believe there will always be somebody to pay it. But in this particular instance, there was at one time, but then there wasn't. It's almost like, how many of you can relate to this? You go online to shop and you find something that you want, right? You want that speaker or you want that TV, you want that dress, whatever the case may be. And instead of buying it immediately, you put it in your cart, right? You put it in that online cart and you let it sit there for a week or two and you think about it. And you think, you know, do I really want that new TV? Do I really need that new recliner or whatever the case may be? And you sit on it for a week or two and you decide, you know what? Yeah, I do want that. So then you hit buy now and you check out and you have it shipped to your house. But sometimes you sit on that for a while and you think, you know what? I just don't think I need it that bad. I've thought about it. Don't have the money. Don't want to risk it. I don't need it right now. And so you delete it out of your cart. That seems to be what have happened right here with Jaden Rashada at Florida. Seems like they said, oh man, we're going to not only are we going to take him, we're going to take him from Miami. They're giving him $10 million. We'll give him $14. They decided on it. They sat on it. And the boosters were like, ooh, wait a minute. I don't think we want to do that. So they didn't. And Rashada didn't know what to do. Now, they gave him something to sign with Florida on National Signing Day, but nowhere near that $14 million. And now here we are. A lawsuit's been filed against Billy Napier and the boosters in Gainesville. Unbelievable, man. Go check it out. ESPN.com under the college football tab. You'll find it there. 30 minutes in to hour number one. We'll talk some Auburn news when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
With Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Halfway through hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. Phone lines are open. Would love to hear from you today. 334-321-1390. No Lindsey Crosby for our baseball power hour. He will be back next week. We'll get caught up on everything from Hoover with the SEC baseball tournament going on this week. That'll be a good thing to get to recap all of that. I know Auburn, of course, not in it. They were unable to get the amount of wins that they needed to qualify for Hoover. And as of right now, knock on wood, it looks like the weather's going to be okay up there this week. I don't believe it. I'm sure there will be a random thunderstorm that pops up just to delay everything. But in the opener game, LSU took down Georgia and 11 over the 6. So that was a pretty big upset. South Carolina playing right now, trying to see what the score is. Doesn't look like they're interviewing the South Carolina head coach, so unable to get a score on that. But SEC tournament going on all week long there in Hoover. Oh, they're playing, it's 6-3. 6-3, South Carolina on top of Alabama, bottom of the third. Something that Uncle T-Bone and I had gotten into yesterday that I'm going to go back to is this power ranking preseason top 25 for college football. And I start looking up and down this list, and a big talking point that we've had this offseason and will continue to have all the way into the start of the season for Auburn is the schedule, right? The schedule this season for Auburn, and I've said this, it is one of the easiest, if not the easiest schedule I have seen in my lifetime. And I've been an Auburn fan my entire life, okay? It is easy compared to what we've seen in the past. Now, if you were to take this schedule and compare it to Ohio State, it's not all that, you know, it's definitely harder. Now, the Big Ten schedules just got harder, too, because of the four additions that they made to the Big Ten, which is so crazy. I keep forgetting that they made additions, too. I keep forgetting that you have USC and UCLA and Washington and Oregon are no longer in the Pac-12, a Pac-12 that doesn't exist anymore, and it's become the Big 18 up there up north. But Auburn's schedule in comparison to what it has been in the past is relatively easy, which is why expectations for Auburn this season are beginning to climb. They're climbing for folks like me, and I believe that they are climbing for folks like you, Auburn fans here in the community and across the state and across the country. Auburn fans are expecting a solid year because of the schedule is a big part of it. There's a ton of other reasons too. All the talent and the guys you've brought in through the portal and the high school ranking and recruits, right? Those are all big time reasons. There's no doubt about it. But I think the schedule plays into this more than just about anything. But you start looking up and down this top 25 power rankings on ESPN.com and just look at the teams that Auburn still has to play. Georgia, the number one team, okay? You play them. You play Alabama, the number 7 team. You play Missouri, the number 8 team on the in the power rankings on your schedule. Okay? Now, you do miss out on a couple of them. You miss out on LSU. You miss out on Ole Miss, who are in the top 15. You miss out on Tennessee, who's number 15. But you still play Oklahoma, who's number 18 in those power rankings as well. And you have to look back and remember, LSU and Ole Miss used to be on the schedule every year. There's no breaking news there, but those used to be games you had to play every year. So just like that, just according to these power rankings, you've taken two top 15 games off your schedule automatically, immediately, just like that. That's a blessing, man. That's a blessing. Because at best, I think you split those games this year if you're Auburn. Because more than likely, one of those, if you were playing Ole Miss and LSU this season, one would be on the road and one would be at home, just to keep it simple. And you probably go 1-1. Whereas now, instead of playing Ole Miss and LSU, you get to play Kentucky and Vanderbilt. Cool. That's awesome. Those are much easier games to win than LSU and Ole Miss. And sure, you're at Kentucky, but you're home for Vanderbilt. So that's where I'm kind of saying one would be at home and one would be on the road. And if anybody wants to disagree with me and tell me that LSU Ole Miss is easier than Kentucky and Vanderbilt, please give me a call. Because I'm going to tell you that you're wrong. So just in two games, Auburn's schedule is significantly better than what it has been in the past. But the SEC is still going to be good. It's still going to be really good. But Auburn should be able to take care of business in some of these games. You're still playing Georgia like you always do, and you still have another SEC team or from the SEC East, or what used to be the East, in Missouri. But now, you just don't have to play the hardest teams each and every week. You don't have to play the best of the best. And let me tell you this, I don't want anything to do with Ole Miss and LSU this season. Miss me with that. I don't want LSU. They lost a ton of talent, but they've recruited like crazy, and nobody's talking about it. They've had and hired some of the best assistant coaches in the country, and nobody is talking about it. And Brian Kelly's still a really good coach, and nobody is talking about it. On top of Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin, who continue to run their train everywhere and continue to do what they do. No, I'm cool. I don't want to play them. I'm sad to see them go off the schedule, but I'd rather win games. I'd rather Auburn win than have to go and lose to LSU on the road again. I don't want to see it. I'm tired of it. And you got to be the best, or I guess you have to beat the best to be the best, but man, I'm cool playing Vanderbilt. Give me that. That's fine. All day, every year, put them on there. I don't care. And where I'm going with this is I want to ask you the question. Auburn is not going to be in any more top 25 preseason rankings. They're not going to be anywhere close. And why should they? They haven't given you any reason to be in a top 25 this season. And going into the preseason and then going into the start of the year, no, they haven't done anything. They ended the year in horrific fashion. Horrific fashion. Right? New Mexico State, 4th-31 in the Iron Bowl. Embarrassment by Maryland. Who in the world would put them as a top 25 team going into this season? Even with all the acquisitions through the transfer portal and through the high school ranks. Doesn't matter. But my question to you, and I've asked this in the past, and it's a lot of fun. When this season, where at in the year, will Auburn become a top 25 team? That's the question that I ask you right now. 334-321-1390. Where in the year, this year, 2024, what game will it be, or what week will it be, when Auburn becomes a top 25 team? Because let me go ahead and tell you this. In this power rankings, it gives a list of about 10 schools that just missed out of the top 25. Auburn's not any of those. Wisconsin, West Virginia, Texas A&M, Louisville, Kentucky, Washington, Boise State, Air Force, and Liberty. So Auburn's not even in the top 35, 40. But my question to you is, when will they be? When will Auburn be ranked for the first time this season? You start looking up and down the schedule. All right. An opening day win over Alabama A&M, that's not going to get you any street creds. A win over Cal, that's not going to get you any credit. New Mexico, that's not going to get you any credit. A home win against Arkansas. Yeah, all right, you're 4-0. Congrats. You're 1-0 in the SEC. That's fine. That's an Arkansas team that, as I pull up their schedule, I feel like they have a tough game. Yep, they do. I knew they did. They had a tough game in one of those first few. They're in Stillwater, Oklahoma, week two to take on the Pokes, Oklahoma State. So, all things considered, Arkansas is probably 2-1 when they come to Auburn. So, no, that win is not going to get you anything if you're the Tigers and Hugh Freeze. A win over Arkansas, no. Nobody's going to turn their head and be like, wow, what a win that was. I think the win over Oklahoma, if you get it in Week 5, would be the only opportunity for you to be a ranked team before you go on the road to Georgia. And even then, just one big win may not be enough to get you in the top 25, depending on what happens around you, what happens ahead of you. Now, there's some big-time matchups in those first few weeks, sure. And teams will lose and drop and go in and all that, but I don't know. Is 4-0 and then a win over Oklahoma to be 5-0 on the road to Athens, is that good enough to be a top 25 team in the eyes of a ranking? I don't know. You tell me. I guess we'll have to find out. Now, you go on the road and beat Georgia, and all of a sudden you're 6-0. Yeah, I have a pretty good feeling you're going to find yourselves in the top 25. But this gets back to my point about why the Oklahoma game is so important. Because let's say you go 4-0, but then you lose to Oklahoma, and then you lose to Georgia. Now you're 4-2, and I can guarantee you, as Charles Barkley would say, guarantee that you're not going to be a ranked team because you'll be 4-2. And the two best teams you've played would have beaten you before you go on the road to Missouri, on the road to Kentucky, home versus Vanderbilt. The Missouri game will give you some credit, but the other two won't. And it's not all about being a top 25 team, but the idea is bigger than that. That's my question to you is, when will Auburn be a top 25 team? But the question really is, when will Auburn make the turn? When will they become a relevant team this season, if at all? And those are legitimate questions we have to ask ourselves. Because while the schedule is doable, the schedule is beatable, it's still the SEC. It's still the best conference in college football, and it's not even close. And you can lose any Saturday. You can lose to Arkansas in Week 4 if you're not ready. You can absolutely lose to Oklahoma and Georgia and on the road at Missouri. You could get caught and get got and lose on the road at Kentucky. And if, oh my goodness, if on November 2nd, Auburn University allows Vanderbilt to walk into Jordan-Hare Stadium and beat them inside that building, I think this fan base would explode. I think they would call, you, an Auburn fan, would call for Hugh Freeze's head right now. Would you not? After New Mexico State last year, if Vanderbilt walks in here and beats Auburn in 2024, would that not be the end? Would that just be the thing that is like, all right, well, this experiment's done. See you later, Hugh. We got to go. This ain't going to work. Would that do it? I think it probably would. I don't care if Auburn's undefeated at that point. If Vanderbilt walked in here on November 2nd and beat Auburn, holy smokes, that would be bad. You still have ULM on there. You've got Texas A&M, and you got on the road at Alabama. So, again, I ask you the question. At what point this season does Auburn become a top 25 team? I have a sneaky feeling, knowing how college football works and knowing how TV and radio rankings work, and how it's all about the matchups. It's all about getting viewers and listeners and engagement. All of those things playing a factor. I have a sneaky suspicion that if Auburn were to go 5-0 this year to start the year with a win over Oklahoma before they go on the road to Georgia, I have a feeling the Tigers would be a top 25 team before they went to Athens. Don't you? Don't you have that feeling? It's like, oh yeah, well, this could be the number one team in the country, Georgia, versus an unranked Auburn team. Or we have an undefeated top 25 SEC showdown night game in Athens inside of Sanford Stadium. Doesn't that sound a lot better than, yeah, the number one team in the country welcomes in unranked Auburn? They're undefeated, but yeah, they hadn't done a whole lot. I don't think they're going to run with that. I think they would let Auburn be a top 25 team. And even if they're not, you beat Georgia, then you would be. But let's say, just to play the game here, let's say you are 5-0 and for whatever reason you don't get ranked and you lose to Georgia. Well, then you got to go and beat Missouri and beat Kentucky. I think at that point you could probably get it. You'd probably get the respect for it at that point to say, yeah, they're top 25 worthy. Their only loss is on the road at Georgia. And since then, they've bounced back and won two straight on the road in the SEC. Yeah, I think you could probably get that credit. Beat Vanderbilt, beat ULM. You're rolling. You're probably a top 20, top 15 team. You beat Texas A&M at home. You got a chance to be a top 10 team when you go on the road to Tuscaloosa to take on Alabama. Tell me why that's not doable. Tell me why that's not an option and a possibility here. What games hold Auburn back this year? Which ones concern you the most right now of this whole schedule, this whole season? Maybe that's a better question. Which games on this schedule concern you as an Auburn fan? I can count three, if that. I count three games that concern me on this schedule. I want to hear yours. I'll tell you mine when we come back. Take our final break here in hour number one. We'll wrap up hour number one after this and get on in to hour number two here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, as we wrap up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, telling you about the games on the Auburn football schedule this season that concern me in terms of Auburn trying to win the game. All right, now, there are normally a lot more than this, and I have three. There are three games this year that I have a problem with convincing myself that Auburn can win. I guess that's the best way I should say that, or I guess as of right now on May 21st, as we are, what, 102 days now from Auburn football kicking off? That should get you going on a Tuesday. There are three games on here that, as of right now, I don't know if Auburn can win. And two of them, I guess you could say I don't think Auburn is going to win, as of right now. The first one is one that I don't know if Auburn's going to win because, man, I just don't know what these two teams are going to look like on September 28th. And the first one is Oklahoma. And this is the most controversial game on Auburn's schedule. This game, I've said this before and I will preach this until September 28th arrives. This is the game that will tell me what this Auburn football season will be like. If Auburn comes out ready to go, comes out playing, comes out swinging, and shows Oklahoma what the SEC is and who they are dealing with, then I'm going to be pumped up and I'm going to be excited and ready. But if Auburn comes out flat and they get punched in the mouth and they let Oklahoma come in here and dominate them in the SEC to get it underway, then we have a problem. And notice how I didn't say anything about Auburn winning or losing that game. I just think it depends on how Auburn looks. Because if Oklahoma comes in here and just plays a better game and beats you at the end, That is what it is, right? At that point, you just kind of, you got to swallow it and move on. What Auburn cannot afford is to get dragged up and down the field for four quarters and let Oklahoma show them who's boss. Do I think Auburn can win that game? Absolutely. You're inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. Auburn could beat the Patriots if they needed to at certain times inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. There's some weird voodoo that happens in there. We know that. That's what makes that place so special. But if this game's in Norman, Oklahoma, I'm scared to death. Are you joking? I'm scared to death if Auburn had to go to Norman, Oklahoma this season. Absolutely not. So that's game number one that does scare me. And I've said that Auburn fans should demand a victory in that game, and I still believe it. The other two are the obvious ones, at Georgia and at Alabama. Auburn going to Athens has pretty much been a horrific trip for goodness, how long? I mean, it's been a long time since Auburn's gotten in there and done what they needed to do in Athens. And Georgia's still going to be Georgia. They're still going to be a good football team. That hasn't changed. That has not changed. And it's an unrealistic ask for Auburn to go in and win that game. For Auburn to go in and compete? No, I don't think they competed last year. And you can make the argument that Auburn should have won that game last year. It just didn't happen. But that was also here on the Plains, and this is going to be over at Sanford Stadium. And the other one is the Iron Bowl. It's still Alabama. It's still Tuscaloosa. It's still Bryant-Denny Stadium. What's changed is the head coach. They've still got a ton of talent. And Uncle T-Bone says it all the time, never count Alabama out. Those three games concern me. The other ones on the schedule, Auburn should win. You should win all the other games. And then in those three, win one or two. Win one. You win one of those games, and 2024 has a chance to be really, really special. Hour number one in the books. Stay tuned. Hour number two coming up. Reminder, Double D, Daryl Dapprich will join us at 3:15. Until then, phone lines are open. 334-321-1390.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Tuesday edition of the show. And I am Jacob Goetz with you on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch up with the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com. That is our station website. You can also search on the line wherever you get your podcast, or you can download our new Radio Alabama app. That is our sister company up in Sylacauga. We've merged all of our stations into one family-friendly app. So you can download Radio Alabama app on the App Store or Google Play today. Coming up here in hour number two, going to talk a little Auburn basketball, kind of look at the roster a little bit, continue to talk about Turtle Hudson is Jaheim Hudson, the SMU transfer. His nickname is Turtle. It's interesting, but I like it. It works. Sure, why not? So continue to talk about him just a little bit. Shorter segment here because, of course, it's Tuesday, which means Double D, Daryl Dapprich, will be joining us coming up in just about 12 minutes or so. So excited to talk with him about all things Auburn Athletics. But until then, phone lines are open. So you've got about 10 minutes or so before we'll shut the phone lines down if you want to be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. Looking at Auburn basketball's roster and thinking about some of the comments that Bruce Pearl had to say yesterday at his golf tournament, just talking about the roster that he had and kind of evaluating what he had and what they wanted to go after in the transfer portal. I mean, there's just been so much, I don't know, chirping maybe? Is that the word I'm looking for from Auburn fans? And maybe some disgruntlement about what the transfer portal additions have looked like and the guys that Auburn has gone after. And more importantly, the guys that Auburn has actually gotten out of the transfer portal, because it's been a little less than I think Auburn fans were expecting. I mean, you do have to remember that Auburn added J.P. Pegues this offseason from Furman, who is going to be your starting point guard, which is a big, big deal. But Auburn fans were still wanting to go and get that another forward and get another guard. And there were just wants and additions that Auburn fans were hopeful for that have not fully happened to, I guess, their liking, per se. And again, J.P. Pegues is a stud. Like, he is a really, really good point guard and is going to be one of the best point guards in the SEC. You have to remember that. And now you're looking at your 1-2 punch of J.P. Pegues and Denver Jones. That is phenomenal. I mean, if you had J.P. Pegues on last year's Auburn basketball team, that team would have made a big run in the NCAA tournament. If you had a point guard that could score and could run the offense and could do, I don't know, anything in a big-time game, Auburn would have beaten Yale, I can promise you that, with J.P. Pegues at the helm, at the point. There's no doubt about it. So you go and you add him, and then that's when all sorts of names started to pop up. Dylan Mitchell, R.J. Godfrey, H.R.H.R., Duke Miles, Jordan Ivy Curry, all those big-time names that Auburn was going after between guards and forwards and, heck, even centers almost. None of them decided to come to Auburn. They all went to separate places. And folks like you started to get a little concerned, and rightfully so. My people like myself started to get concerned. People in the media and in the radio world and in everywhere around Auburn were starting to be like, okay, what's going on here? Why is this happening? Something doesn't pass the smell test on why this is happening. And we blamed it on playing time and NIL and things like that. And I do think that was the case most of the time. But it still doesn't hide the fact that Auburn fans were a little disappointed in what the back end of the transfer portal has looked like, the transfer portal cycle has looked like for Auburn. But with Hudson, the SMU transfer, Jaheim Hudson, he's a good player. And I think he can come in and compete. Do I think he takes a starting job from anybody? No, probably not. I doubt it. I don't think that's going to be the case. But I do think he's somebody that you can rely on, somebody that you can bring off the bench and be confident that he is going to make you a better team, that he's on it, right? And I always talk about the drop-off between the starters and the bench, where right now, especially in the transfer portal, you can limit that drop-off pretty significantly from when you're starting three guy. We'll just use a small forward, for example. When your starting small forward sits on the bench for the next 4 to 5 minutes because of rest, foul trouble, injury, whatever the case may be, okay, you bring in his backup. How much, and I guess there's not a better way to say this, how much worse is he than his starter? It's like the wins over replacement, right? It's that kind of a stat where how are you compared to the guy in front of you? And you want that to be as limited of a margin as possible. And that's what Auburn and all these other teams have tried to do. That's what you're trying to do with another point guard, and that's what you've been trying to do with another forward. And that's what you got with Turtle Hudson, is you bring somebody in that I think is going to be a competitor. I think he's going to be a player. But it seemed like Auburn, with R.J. Godfrey or H.R.H.R., or even Dylan Mitchell, trying to go find somebody that could come in and push to be a starter, to where you borderline had two starters at the same position. One of them was just your official starter, and the other one was getting significant minutes off the bench. I don't think Auburn got that in Hudson, but I still think they got a good player. And then on the flip side, in terms of guards, you still haven't fully gotten what you wanted yet. You had these players that you were going after, but you still have not seen Auburn land that last little piece. But some of the comments from Bruce Pearl yesterday was how he just valued the talent and the experience that his team had coming back. And he used that and kind of thought about that when he was in the transfer portal. And just trying to analyze what his team was, what his team was going to look like, and ultimately what they needed to do when they were going in the transfer portal. And overall, just talking about the guys coming back, this is a really good roster, man. This is a competitive SEC top 10 college basketball roster with a chance to still get a little bit better when you add on the likes of one more guard. And you start looking around the SEC, heck, just look across the state. Alabama's got a fantastic roster. But Auburn's right there too. And I think that these two teams could run the SEC. I think the title could run through this state, which has not happened consistently in a long, long time. The question marks of Kentucky with Mark Pope. The question marks of, I guess, no pun intended with question mark, right? No, the question marks with John Calipari at Arkansas. Florida, are they going to be competitive this year? Like Tennessee, can Tennessee get over the hump with Rick Barnes? I'm convinced that they can't, but maybe they'll prove me wrong. And the newcomers of Texas and Oklahoma. This conference is going to be a lot of fun, man. SEC, we talk a lot about SEC football and how it's going to be insane. Think about SEC basketball, men and women's. Think about baseball and softball and all the other sports. Texas, Oklahoma bring a ton. And then who knows what other teams are added over the next few seasons. I mean, the Big Ten continues to add teams. They're almost going to be the Big 20. They have 18 teams up there now. Isn't that crazy? 18 teams in a conference that calls itself the Big Ten. You would think they would have changed the name by now. They had 12 for a long time. They had 14 for a long time. And yet, I guess they've stuck their flag in the ground. They're not going to move that stake. They're going to sit on the Big Ten as long as they possibly can. Hey, more credit to them, man. Good for you. But to get back to the original point, I'm telling Auburn fans that it's okay. It's okay that Auburn hasn't gotten that final guard. Yes, they have swung and missed on quite a few. And for whatever reasons, it is what it is. Bottom line is, they're not playing at Auburn. They're playing somewhere else. And the roster's still competitive. The roster's still top 10 in college basketball. Now it has to come together. And Uncle T-Bone and I talked about this yesterday. The pressure is on. The pressure's on Bruce. It has to come together. It has to happen. I'm not saying you got to win the national title, but you got to make a push for it. You have to make a push for it because there's a lot of experience on this team. You've brought in a lot of talent from high school, transfer portal, and you've brought back some serious dudes. This is one of the best rosters Auburn basketball has ever had, and it has to happen this season. Because if it does not, and what I mean by it is you've got to make a run. I'm talking Elite Eight level. I'm talking Elite Eight or better. Because if you can't get it done now, the question becomes, can you ever? And that's a serious question to ask. That's a lot to ask. Talk about pressure. But at what point do we have to get and elevate that bar and have that demand and those to be the expectations? I don't think it's out of the question. I don't think it's crazy. Some people might. Purists may say that it's just a blessing to have Bruce, but at some point, you got to get some results. And I think, and I get fired up about it because the team is good enough. This roster is going to be good enough, ladies and gentlemen. This roster is phenomenal. I want to see it come together. I want to see it blossom and come to fruition to be the best that it can be. I think that can happen. But it's just got to happen. And we'll talk about that and a whole lot more with Double D, Daryl Dapperidge. He'll join us when we come back after this here on ESPN 106.7. This is the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
On ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
It is Tuesday in the second hour here on ESPN 106.7 around 3:15. We always say 3:15-ish to 3:45-ish when we talk to this guy each and every Tuesday. Double D, Daryl Dappert's joining us on the phone lines. You can find him on Locked On Auburn, the podcast, a couple of times a week. He's getting into the written side of things on auburndaily.com and makes about 10 radio hits a day. Double D, what's up, man? How are you?
Man, how are you doing? Great to get with you again. I look forward to these Tuesday conversations a lot. Time flies after lunch. I'm like, oh, a couple hours, and then we go.
There you go. Hey, as long as you're looking forward to it, and it's still fun for you, it is fun for us, and we always have a good time talking all things Auburn athletics and maybe a little bit of other stuff today as well. But as we get through, as we're, near the end of May now, which is pretty wild, you've got spring sports that are wrapping up for Auburn. You do have the golf team still competing, women's team right now, men's team getting going in the championship series this weekend, but baseball, softball, Daryl, in the books, the SEC tournament for baseball happening right now, but of course, Butch Thompson and the boys unable to make it there, and then softball losing in Tallahassee this weekend.
Yeah, you know, I would say this, that as far as what could have been a disappointing spring season for both softball and baseball, at least had a little bit of a better taste, you know, as far as the end of the year, Auburn winning its last two series in baseball, beating Missouri. And then anytime you beat your arch rival, you know, but taking 2 of 3 from Alabama. That game Friday night got a little hairy, though, with it being one out away from a run rule. But, you know, then Auburn softball, with the disappointing way they lost to Georgia in the SEC tournament, to come back all the way through the loser's bracket with just a Hall of Fame performance by Matty Penta to get them to the championship game, and they actually take the lead and tie the ball game up, but just, you know, didn't have enough in the tank. It made it at least a little bit easier to swallow the way the season ended. Now, you know, if you followed Auburn baseball at all, Butch Thompson expects to be in, you know, the SEC tournament, compete for title in the regionals and the super regionals, and even taking two teams to the College World Series. So it's disappointing that they're playing in Hoover right now, and Auburn's not there. It's kind of weird. But I think that Auburn's going to bounce back next year from a baseball standpoint. I love the recruiting class. As long as Butch could hold on to them and they don't get drafted into Major League Baseball and the amateur draft here in the next month. And then the softball program has some returning players, and we'll see what direction they go as far as hiring a new coach, because all the candidates that allegedly are out there that Auburn's talking to, I've been very high on all of them and would be pleased if they picked any of the 4 or 5 names we've heard.
Well, with the softball program, I mean, it's no secret that, you know, when Mickey Dean stepped in, it was a tough situation. I mean, it was a tough situation. That's the best way to put it, I think. And he stepped in and took the team to the postseason every year he was here, and decided to step away, and now softball going in a different direction and hoping to find the next great head coach for the softball program. And then, yeah, for baseball, I mean, pitching seemed to be the woe time and time again. Injuries didn't help, something you and I have talked about all season long, but a 2-series win streak to end the year, including one over Alabama, you can use that, right, Daryl, and you get into these off-season conversations with some big-name players on that roster to try and convince them to come back for one more year.
Yeah, the injury thing is one of those deals where there's nothing you can do, and you can't do anything about it. I mean, I think if this lineup would have stayed very consistent, they could have, you know, it's still hard out slugging people because of the way the pitching in late innings kind of faltered. I mean, you're not going to be able, it's not realistic for you to think you're going to score 10, 11, 12 runs a game. Auburn had a potent offense, had the potential to do that, but you're just not once you get into SEC play. So Auburn's got to address the pitching issue and specifically late innings and get some bullpen help. I think that, you know, the whole starting pitching thing was a little bit of a backfired from the fact that Gonzalez didn't get what everyone thought he was going to be able to get as far as innings and quality starts. So, you know, those things matter, and I think that they were counting on that, and it just didn't play out.
Well, that is what the spring sports are up to with softball, baseball in the books. Again, the rest of spring sports wrapping up for Auburn in the next couple of weeks. As we talk with Daryl Dapperts with us on the phone lines, talking all things Auburn athletics, we have some basketball things to talk about, Daryl, because since the last time you and I talked on the air, Auburn basketball picked up another transfer portal commit, Jaheim Hudson, or Turtle, as they call him, from SMU. The forward has committed to play for Bruce Pearl and the Tigers, and so that spot has been filled. Your thoughts on him committing to Auburn late last Friday?
Well, you know, I always felt like that was a kid that was going to commit to Auburn if the Mitchell kid from Texas did not. And I'm not saying he's a plan B. I just think that Auburn was looking for another four. Mitchell was a kid that, you know, had a lot of upside and had a couple years left and was a former five-star. So, but Hudson's more of a proven commodity, meaning that he's got some experience. He's got some veteran leadership to him. He played at Georgia State, where he had a really good game against Auburn. And there's the trend, right, that we've seen with Bruce Pearl over the last couple of years. You play Morehead State, Janiah Broome goes off, Auburn signs him. You know, you play, I think it was Chaney Johnson, he has a really good game against Auburn in an exhibition last year. 2 years ago, Auburn signs him. So Bruce Pearl has done that before, where he's played against kids at the mid-majors, and then he goes ahead and recruits them to come play for him. That's an example with Hudson. He played at Georgia State, had a good game against Auburn a couple of years ago, went to SMU, and I don't know what happened. It's not like it's that much of an upgrade to go from Georgia State to SMU as far as the level of competition that they were facing, and his numbers dropped, six points, four rebounds a game, and about 15 minutes per. I will say this. If Auburn is looking at pairing him with Chaney Johnson and not recruiting him over the top of Chaney Johnson, then what you hope for is both guys play between, you know, 15 and 18 minutes a game. If Chaney Johnson can give you 8 points a game and four boards, and this guy can give you 7-8 points a game and four boards, now you're getting 16 and 8 from your four position. And maybe that's what it is. And then Chris Moore backs them up, or however you do that, as far as a Darren Scott for a few minutes. So maybe they're looking at the sum of the whole parts as opposed to just individual. I know a lot of people felt like Auburn was going to go out and get a four that you could plug and play that would be the starter, that's a double-figure guy. And maybe they're just taking a different approach. And they do like Hudson's defense a lot and how he guards, 6'7", big body. So we'll see. I think if him and Chaney Johnson both play to their potential or even overachieve a little bit, you could be really productive. Really productive out of that four spot.
Daryl, I'm under the assumption, I guess is the best word to say, that when Auburn was going after the likes of RJ Godfrey or Acre and those and Dylan Mitchell from Texas, I think they were going after players like that who could come in and threaten to start in this five-man rotation. Whereas with Turtle Hudson, I feel like he's coming in to be a solid backup, and I don't know if there's a whole lot of threat for him to start. Do you agree with that?
I agree, except for one of the names you mentioned. Godfrey was never a threat to start over Chaney Johnson.
Okay.
I just don't believe that. I look at his numbers coming off the bench at Clemson, and they are eerily similar to Hudson. 6 points a game, four rebounds. Yeah, he had a good game against Alabama the first time they played. Against Alabama in the tournament. That's what everybody remembers. But his numbers were no more impressive than Hudson's. So when they were recruiting Godfrey early on, I was thinking that's a depth piece. Then when they started looking at, you know, a chore and the Mitchell kid, I'm like, okay, well, that's your potential starter. They've flipped the script a little bit. And Godfrey, to me, out of all four, is the least appealing to me. I mean, I would have taken him. I was glad. Maybe he had a lot more upside because he had 3 years. But Hudson seems to be a little more proven and maybe a little bit more physical for what Auburn needs. But now the other two, like you said, yeah, they would have been probably counted on to start.
And then I guess that brings up the question too, because Godfrey was one of the earlier ones that Auburn went after, and it's like, okay, why go after him as a depth piece? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, here's Dylan Mitchell who could start. Let's go for him now. I wonder where that timeline kind of got messed up there.
You know, you wonder if a kid like Mitchell could play multiple positions, not just the four, but might be able to push Chapek and Mazar to three a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
And if Achor could play some five. I don't know if it was more of a hybrid type thing. I don't know that. I they had both listed as fours, all three of them listed as power forward positions. So, and I guess the other thing people are overlooking is the rumor true that Broome's going to play some four? So if that's the case, now you've got Broome maybe starting at the five, coming in and playing some minutes at the four when Cardwell goes to the five. And if, let's just say Broome gives you 5-6 minutes a game at the four, now all you need to do is get, 34 minutes from the other two. There's a possibility that, like we've said, because of the NBA draw and all that, that Broome plays more minutes at the four. And if that happens, then Cardwell's going to be counted on, but then where's your backup five? That creates a big problem.
Yeah.
So that's where I think it would be some flexibility to this roster and some hybrid positions going back and forth.
Which I'm totally fine with. I don't understand why there's been some pushback and maybe just, not even pushback, but maybe just a lack of acceptance of that, where play Janai at the four, play some Dylan at the five, play a backup four if you got him. I mean, move some guys around and see what happens. I don't hate that idea, Daryl, and we'll see if Auburn decides to do that with Turtle Hudson. Plus, we'll see if they do pick up that final guard that they're looking for out of the transfer portal as well. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Daryl Dapridge from Locked On Auburn, Auburn Daily Montgomery radio legend. He joins us every Tuesday here on ESPN Radio. More conversation with him, talking more Auburn football when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you on ESPN 106.7. Joining us on the phone lines is Daryl Dapridge. He was with us the last segment and with us for another segment as well, as we talked to him for about 30 minutes, give or take, right, Daryl, on Tuesdays, and talking all things Auburn athletics. And before we get to some Auburn football particular things, did you see the news today that Jaden Rashada, the former Florida commit, is suing Billy Napier and some of the boosters for almost $14 million, the amount he feels he was cheated out of by the Gators?
Doesn't surprise me, because when he flipped and went to Arizona State last year, there were some rumblings that he did that because of broken promises with NIL. And so there were some rumors that there were some promises made, and he couldn't come up with the money, and there wasn't enough NIL funds. And so at some point, I thought that this was going to happen. And I talked about this 3 or 4 years ago on the other radio show that I hosted. It was our good friend Doug Amos on the Max Roundtable. I said somewhere down the line, this is going to become toxic, and either a NIL contributor is going to go after the kid for not fulfilling his obligations, or the kid's going to go after the school and say, you're not giving me what you promised to. And that's why they opened up Pandora's box. It's going to be ugly. They better start getting attorneys involved with these contracts and make them ironclad, because we're going to see more of this. Especially if a kid feels like, oh, I was going to get, $500,000, but now that I'm not starting, my NIL's been cut this year, but you're not starting me because you don't want to pay me. Kind of like baseball players with those performance incentives and mm-hmm. those bonuses. The whole reason why the 1919 Black Sox scandal started, by the way, a little history there for you, is that there were performance bonuses built into a lot of these guys' contracts, and the cheap owner of the Chicago White Sox purposely told that manager not to play these guys down the stretch.
Man.
So they wouldn't hit their performance incentives. Well, if you got a college kid that's a starter, and then he gets beat out the next year, and they're like, look, you're not worth $500,000. You're coming off the bench. They will say, well, that's because you're benching me. You're not starting me. It is Pandora's box. This is one of many that's coming down the pike. And unfortunately, like anything else, there's going to have to be different laws put into effect, but different state laws vary from state to state. So we'll see. It's scary, but they better give the coaches the same leeway. If Rashada goes after Florida and they find them, you know, culpable for this money, then when a player underperforms, because right now you can't put in an NIL contract if there's a performance behavioral based thing. Yeah, if you get kicked off the team, you're gone, or if you're out of school. But if you do something and it's not up to the standards or the rules of the team, you can't adjust their NIL. And so if it goes that way, it better go the other way too, where a coach could say, you're not practicing hard enough, you're making too many mental errors in games. You know, again, there's a fine line there, because if somebody's physically making errors and throws an interception or whatever, that's different. But if there's some things with attitude or effort, then you should be able to adjust their NIL if this sets precedence and they go after Florida for not doing what they said.
And where it all is really getting murky for me, Darryl, is where the different outlets of the money is coming from, right? It's coming from the collectives, and it's coming from car dealerships. And now, you know, schools are trying to get the access to just be able to pay the kids directly from the University of Florida. And that's where it's all getting murky, and that's where this Jaden Rashada thing really gets weird, because it was numerous parties that were guaranteeing a lump sum of money, and then parties started pulling out of it, and Rashada just got left in the dark. I mean, at this point, you just got to get everything in writing, in my opinion, sign a legitimate contract, and if it gets broken, then you take legal action.
We are overlooking and forgetting, though, that this goes against the spirit of what NIL was supposed to be.
You better believe it.
Rashada had never even been on campus yet, so he shouldn't have been given a freaking dime with the spirit of what NIL started with. Name, image, and likeness is supposed to be a transaction between goods and services.
Mm-hmm.
If the kid's never been on campus and hasn't played a snap, how is his name, image, and likeness even applying? Again, they have looked the other way and let it morph into a recruiting tool, and it was never supposed to be given as an enticement to get kids to come to your school.
Yeah, this had signing bonuses on it.
That's pay for play. That's pay for play. Look, it's real simple. If they want to fix it, they say you don't get a dime until you start, and not even on campus. If you want to say, okay, when you go through spring practice and you're a member of the team and you get your helmet and your number and your locker, that's fine. But you don't get a dime until you put the uniform on. Then when you put the uniform on, you have to do a series of things. You have to make public appearances. You have to sign some autographs. You have to go to Children's Hospital. You have to go and help with a camp. That's what it was supposed to be. Remember Bo Nix, Milo's sweet tea.
Mm-hmm.
He was pushing a product. That was legitimate. It wasn't, NIL wasn't being used to get Bo Nix to come to Auburn in the first place. That's the problem. They've never even set foot on campus, and they're getting money, and that's not what NIL was intended to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've completely just butchered what the spirit of the NIL rule, or what the NIL initiative was supposed to be. They just need to get it under control and say, you don't get a dime. We can promise you you'll get this much NIL money, but you don't get it until you play a snap. I would love to see that. So in case a kid doesn't come on freaking campus, like the Proctor kid from Iowa, and never plays a snap for Iowa and transfers back to Alabama, you don't think he didn't get some NIL to go from Alabama to Iowa in the first place, the big offensive tackle? Of course he did. But they never played a snap for the Hawkeyes. Make sure that they suit up and play in some games before they get that money is the way I look at it. I didn't get paid to come work where I work until I actually showed up for work.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about signing bonuses now, where it's like, hey, we'll give you $1 million if you pick us and sign your natural letter of intent on signing day. And nowadays, even in the recruiting world, where you can't trust if a guy commits verbally because he could still go somewhere else, you still can't trust even if he signs his national letter of intent. And that's where a lot of these schools and programs and collectives are getting into it too, because Just even the signed letter, Darryl, doesn't mean that he's going to play football for you in the fall, because he can just ask for it to be removed.
That's why the worst possible things to happen is the two worlds collided and they rolled out NIL and transfer portal at the same time.
Oh, man.
And just like they've loosened the reins of the transfer portal, because remember when it first came out, you get one freebie. That's it.
Yep.
Now, one, two, three, you know, they're jumping. And they're not sticking. Stick to the letter of the law on that. Say you get one transfer portal. That's it. I don't care what happens. You get one. And that's it. Up, down, sideways, in conference, out of conference, you get one. And then NIL, only when you get on campus and provide some goods or services. If you did those two things and enforced them, made them non-negotiable, you would see some of this slowing down and being less crazy and more sane. But for some reason, whether it's enforcement officers not having enough, the pandemic hitting at the same time, people just turn their heads, threw their hands up in the air, are so afraid of litigation. I mean, I want the NCAA back that went after SMU and shut them down. I get it. That was harsh. They got the death penalty. But SMU was laughing at the NCAA for years, begging them, mocking them, do something about it. They did, and boy, did some schools tighten their belts up and stop cheating as much. I mean, it's just they have no stick anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're not feared. And if the NCAA isn't going to put these things in place, then I think the conference commissioners need to be stronger and start dropping the hammer a little more on this and not worry about a kid or a coach that had some past indiscretions blocking them from coming to play in the SEC. The joke, what they focus on, a joke.
It's a wild, wild west out there is what people continue to label this as in terms of NIL and the transfer portal. And just another example with former Florida commit Jaden Rashada suing Billy Napier and the Boosters in Gainesville for almost $14 million. Talking with Darryl Dappert here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Want to flip this to Auburn really quickly. I've been talking a little bit today, Darryl, in the latest power rankings in college football from ESPN. Auburn will play four of the current top 25 teams on this power ranking, but they also dodge three different ones, four if you want to count Texas. I continue to say that this upcoming football schedule for Auburn in 2024 is one of the easiest that I have seen in my lifetime. I ask you this question, Darryl. Which games on the schedule do you fear the most in terms of this Auburn football team coming up this year?
Well, I fear the games that Auburn should win. Those are the ones that always concern me when I coached. I mean, you know, the Georgia-Alabama games are big games, but there's no fear factor there. Even the Oklahoma game, which Zach has deemed the most important game on the schedule.
I have too.
A game like Texas A&M, Cal at home, you know, a game that you should win, but they're sneaky enough to keep it close on the road last year. You know, the Arkansas game, conference game, but games that are toss-ups concern me too, the A&Ms, the at Kentucky. But if I had to pick one, if you said, okay, gun to the head, what's the game you fear the most? It's the Cal game.
Really?
And people will laugh and say, why? Because it's lose-lose proposition for Auburn. You beat them, and everyone's like, so what? You beat former Pac-12 cupcake Cal. You beat them last year on the road. Of course you beat them at home. You lose to them, it could flip the whole narrative of your season. And it will be difficult to kind of overcome that or live up to that. Now, football week to week, you can go out, beat Arkansas at home, get on a roll, win some games. But that the one that worries me the most is Cal, because if you lose it, it could be potentially, like I've seen on message boards, lose to Cal at home and you've got bigger problems.
I think you could put Vanderbilt in that category too, couldn't you, Darryl?
I think Cal would beat Vanderbilt by four touchdowns. That's why I just think Cal, again, this is a team that was in. I think Auburn will be better this year. I think Auburn's roster will be significantly better. You're playing at home, so that's a 7-point swing in my mind. But that Ott kid that plays running back for Cal is the real deal. He ain't no joke. Now, he runs his mouth and got slammed body slam.
I forgot about that.
You know, that freshman quarterback should be better. Ott's good. Their defense was a little bit salty. But having to come to Jordan-Hare is a big difference than playing a night game when Auburn's half asleep at midnight their time, you know, Auburn's time. I just think that it's not, again, Vanderbilt, I don't think, has the same, even with, although Vanderbilt's got that quarterback that you know, led Auburn up at New Mexico State. They have Pavia. I think that Cal could present a problem. I think Auburn wins that game, and I think Auburn wins that game by two touchdowns. But if you lose that game, that's the one that scares me to lose. Look, a lot of coaches have said they get out of coaching when the fear of losing overrides the joy of winning. And I know for me personally, I couldn't even enjoy winning sometimes when I was coaching at the end, and it was just a sigh of relief. When that happens, that's a game that it's, again, it's a lose-lose scenario for Auburn. Now, please, everyone that's listening, do not misunderstand me or hear what I'm saying. I fully expect Auburn to win that game and win it by two touchdowns, but it's the one you could afford least to lose, in my opinion.
I heard you predict that Auburn's going to lose by four touchdowns to Cal in week two.
Auburn's going to beat Cal 31-17, but it's one that you cannot – that concerns me if you lose it.
Yeah.
Put it that way. But I don't think they will.
I'm with you on that, because
I'd be concerned if a meteor hit my roof right now. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
Yeah, you're not predicting it's going to happen, but it would be bad if it did.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and you're right about it. You're right about the projection of the season. I mean, God, imagine that would just halt and just destroy everything that we're going to get built up before the season starts, because you know how it goes here. I mean, the roster's in a good spot. The schedule is beatable. The season is going to be hyped up by the time we get there, and losing to Cal in week two at home would just put a stop to all of that right in its tracks.
Yeah, and it could change the trajectory the rest of the season. Just like Auburn beating Oklahoma to go 5-0, if they were to take care of business and win all the games they were because they'll be favored in the first four. And if Auburn was to beat Oklahoma, who right now Auburn's a 3-point dog to Oklahoma at home, and I think that'll switch by the time they kick it off. If Auburn was to win that game and get to 5-0, you're now one game away from being bowl eligible, and you haven't even gotten into October yet. People aren't putting out pumpkin latte and the Halloween decorations and all the women with the, you know, potpourri and all that good stuff. So that fall brings. So, yeah, that's why the trajectory of seasons could be changed on swing games.
And Auburn's got quite a few of them coming up in this current season and this current schedule. I wanted to get your thoughts on that, and that ended up being really interesting. And I think you're absolutely right. With the Cal game, Oklahoma game, there's numerous of them on this schedule that Auburn's got to find a way to be competitive and take advantage of, and ultimately try to get some wins this fall. Daryl Dapprich, Double D, he's with me every single Tuesday from 3:15-ish to 3:45-ish here on ESPN 106.7. Daryl, tell the people where they can find you and everything you're up to nowadays, my man.
Monday morning, 7:10 with Ben Taylor on WANI. We do a little sports segment there for about 15 minutes. And then with you, 3:15, 3:45 every Tuesday on the line. Zach Blackerby, Wednesdays and Fridays, Locked on Auburn, where you get your podcast and on YouTube. And then some hit and miss, depending on what's going on, some writing for Auburn Daily.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you and your time. Always a blast talking sports with you. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
You too, brother. Take care.
That's Daryl Dapprich. You can find him again, Locked on Auburn, a couple of days a week. He's on multiple radio shows throughout the state as well, and just a great personality, great radio guy, great sports guy, but just an even better person, Daryl Dapprich. He's with me every Tuesday from 3:15 to 3:45. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN Radio.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate Daryl Dapprich joining me as he does every single week from 3:15, 3:45, talking all things Auburn athletics. Got into a little bit of the NIL conversation today as well with the Jaden Rashada news, and I figured Daryl would have some things to say about that. And how about him saying the game that worries him the most is the Cal game for Auburn this fall because of what it means if Auburn loses that game. And look, I think he's got a great point. It's a lose-lose for Auburn. He's exactly right. Auburn beats Cal week two. Nobody, they're not going to talk about that on any show anywhere all week long, except here on this station and over on game day on Wings 94.3. That's it. Anybody else talking about Auburn Cal? But if Auburn loses that game, oh boy. I talked about the Vanderbilt game earlier, but man, if Auburn were to lose against California in week two, everybody would be coming for Hugh Freeze's head. So that's interesting that Daryl said that. If you missed that part of the conversation or any other parts of that conversation or any other parts of the show today, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com. Search On the Line wherever you get your audio podcast, or you can download our Radio Alabama app. That is our sister company up in Sylacauga. We have combined all of our radio stations into one big app, so you can download that Radio Alabama on the App Store and Google Play. Coming up tomorrow on the show, Uncle T-Bone will be back in the studio, and we'll get into some more good conversations. Depending on what happens, would like to keep talking and really start getting into this Auburn football roster as we are getting into the, I guess not the dog days of summer yet, but we're getting into the end of May, into June. Once we get to July, that's when you kind of start making the turn, right? We're making the turn into football season. The 100-day marker is this week. Believe we are 102 days away. I'm going to double check that just to make sure. But as we get to, let's see, how many days till August 31st? Yep, 102 days according to the Google. So 102 days from kickoff for Auburn football. So that would mean Thursday would be 100 days until Auburn football kicks off. How about that? But as we get into June and July, talking a lot about the roster and the schedule, doing some big time rankings, right? Last year, we had a lot of fun ranking the quarterbacks in the SEC, ranking the head coaches in the SEC. So that is a lot of things that we're going to get into. Didn't have Lindsey Crosby today, but he will join us next Tuesday, as he typically does, for our Baseball Power Hour. And hey, coming up on Friday, no Uncle T-Bone Friday, but we are going to have Christian Clemente, our recruiting guru from Auburn 247. He'll be with us in the first hour on Friday from 2 to 3. So be sure that you are here for that. You don't want to miss it. As Auburn football recruiting really picking up, it's about to be a busy, busy time for Auburn football throughout the summer in terms of seeing kids and having camps and all that type of stuff. So Christian will be with us on Friday from 2 to 3 from Auburn 247. That's coming up on Friday. Uncle T-Bone's back tomorrow. Thursday, Brad Law, Chris Gordy, and then, yes, Christian Clemente on Friday. If you missed the show today, ESPNAU.com. Thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it. We had a lot of fun on the show today. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.